Hey there, and welcome to The Play's the Thing, podcast number 9, Crisis, Climax, and Resolution. My name is Andy Black, and I'm a playwright. This podcast series is being offered in conjunction with the Play Submissions Helper website. My own personal website is www.andrewblackplaywright.com. The Play Submissions Helper website is www.playsubmissionshelper.com. This podcast will discuss three key elements of narrative: crisis, climax, and resolution, which are interrelated and occur near the end of the story. I will also talk a little bit about theme and how theme is revealed partially through these key elements. Before we get into that content, however, let me take care of a few administrative details. Each of the podcasts has a learning aid which can be downloaded from the Play Submissions Helper website in PDF form. The learning aid that goes with this podcast is called Podcast 9, Crisis, Climax, and Resolution. You'll be able to follow along with some of the key points of this podcast by downloading and printing out this handout if you want to do that. Second of all, who am I? Well, I'm Andy Black. I'm your host for these podcasts. And as I mentioned earlier, my website is www.andrewblackplaywright.com, so you can visit my website and get more information about me. There's also more information about me and my background and why it is that I'm qualified to talk about these topics in the handout. So if you want to take a look at that, that would be fine as well. And then lastly, Play Submissions Helper. Play Submissions Helper, or PSH, is a community of more than 1,700 playwrights. Its goal is to help playwrights realize their dream of getting plays produced, and it's designed to save playwrights hours of time searching for theaters to which their work can be submitted. For just $6.99 a month, PSH provides a compendium of hundreds of theaters and other organizations that accept play submissions. It's a great system for a busy playwright who wants to focus on the craft of playwriting and still submit as the writing is taking place. So you can sign up for Play Submissions Helper by going to www.playsubmissionshelper.com. So now let's get started with today's topic. And if you want to follow along with a quick peek at the agenda, you can turn to page 4 of your handout. I've already done this startups, and in a moment I'm going to talk about teaching examples I'll be using in the podcast. There are three topics today: crisis, climax, and resolution. And so for each of them, I'm going to be describing the narrative element, explaining a little bit about how it functions to serve the overall narrative, and then providing some examples. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to be looking at how crisis, climax, and resolution relate to some other key elements of narrative. So I'll be looking at them in context, and then also looking at them in relationship to the overall theme of the play. And then I'll be summarizing and providing some action learning assignments if you want to continue your own study of these topics independently. So first, the teaching examples. As I've said before in earlier podcasts, one of the challenges of teaching playwriting is that it's actually helpful to use examples from great plays. Unfortunately, not all playwrights have read all plays. So I'm going to suggest again that aspiring playwrights do need to familiarize themselves with the great works and, if need be, seek them out, either by reading them, watching them in some kind of online format, or actually seeing them in the theater. This podcast is going to use 5 well-known plays as its teaching examples: Shakespeare's Hamlet, Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin in the Sun, Frank Baum's the movie version of The Wizard of Oz, and I'm going to actually be referring to that primarily as a movie, although it has been adapted for the stage, Henrik Ibsen's A Doll's House, and Meredith Willson's The Music Man. So let's get into the topic, crisis. So what is crisis and how does it function? So for the purposes of this podcast today, I'm going to be defining the terms crisis, climax, and resolution in a specific way so that we're all talking about the same thing. I'm going to say right at the outset that not all theorists use these terms in the same way. Some theorists refer to these elements by other names. So I don't want you to be confused by that. There's no right way to talk about the elements of narrative. Any way is okay if it helps you use the elements more effectively. But for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to define the terms as I go along, just so that it's clear we're all talking about the same thing. So in today's podcast, crisis is going to refer to the final obstacle that the protagonist faces before the major dramatic question is answered. The crisis is the worst possible thing that could possibly happen to the protagonist as he or she is moving towards the goal. At the point of crisis, something frequently gets broken that from the audience's perspective could never be fixed. The audience should be rooting for the protagonist, and if properly built, the protagonist will have engendered a great deal of empathy from the audience, which is going to be rooting for him or for her to fulfill the quest and get that thing that the protagonist believes is going to provide peace of mind. Often, the playwright will have also built an ethical sense of rightness about the quest. Not only are we rooting for the protagonist because we identify with that character, but in some way that quest now seems morally justified to us. We want the hero to overcome the monster, find the treasurer, or become the princess. In the case of a tragedy, we should be hoping that somehow at the last minute, the protagonist will right the ship and prevent what appears to be inevitable doom. Then, at the 11th hour, something happens in the story which could conceivably dash all those dreams. Something takes place which would seem to make it impossible for the hero or the heroine to achieve the goal, and that thing is the crisis. A crisis significantly raises the suspense at the play's conclusion. Now, in most stories, the hero will eventually find a way to overcome even that final obstacle. But to fully engage the audience's emotions, we must suspect and fear that the goal will never be realized. The belief, sometimes a mistaken belief, that the hero or the heroine will not be able to achieve the goal allows the audience to experience delight and surprise when, in fact, that character overcomes the obstacle. There should be a sense of relief when the goal is achieved. And this phenomenon is part of what provides the audience with an emotional experience or a catharsis. And when the catharsis takes place, the audience will have so bonded with the protagonist psychologically that they feel the character's pain of loss and the character's joy in victory. So this emotional journey parallels the emotional journey of the audience through their own life, which is why it's both powerful and important. Whatever it is that an audience member may want in life outside the theater they happen to be sitting in, it may be something like reconciling with a loved one, they may want a new job, they may want to win a contest, it's likely that that individual is going to experience ups and downs as they pursue that goal. At some point, the audience may experience circumstances which on the surface would appear to scuttle the possibility that the goal could ever be achieved. Getting to experience the mini death of a vision and then experience its rebirth in the theater parallels experiences that most audience members have had one or more times in their lives, and they may actually even be having as they sit there in the theater watching your play. Frequently, less experienced playwrights leave out the crisis, and the play generally suffers for that omission. The protagonist is able to resolve the dilemma too easily, and to a certain extent, the fun is taken out of the resolution. While at the point of crisis, the protagonist may be close to achieving the goal, and the crisis may be that he or she has a change of heart at the last minute and runs the risk of ruining everything. Here, the crisis is caused by the protagonist's own character. This situation requires a protagonist who is built with enough ambivalence that this turn of events is believable. Most people experience a high level of ambivalence about getting something they want for multiple reasons, and this ambivalence can reflect an important aspect of human nature and makes for a more interesting character. I frequently coach playwrights to rewire the conclusion of their play to add a crisis. It can be done as a writing exercise just to see what happens, but frequently the playwright ends up seeing how much excitement it adds to the end of the play. So now that I've talked about the theory of the crisis, let me give you some examples. So in The Wizard of Oz, I theorized that the crisis is the moment when the balloon, which has been brought out of storage to take Dorothy and the Wizard back to Kansas, flies away without Dorothy. This rabbit that the Wizard has pulled out of his hat was Dorothy's ticket to achieving her goal after all the obstacles she'd already overcome. With the balloon gone, all Dorothy is left with is a group of friends who are comforting her and telling her that they'll be happy to provide her more comfort as she grieves this missed opportunity. All appears bleak for Dorothy Gale. In Raisin in the Sun, the crisis is when Walter Lee learns that his cronies have taken the money he gave them as a down payment for the liquor store and absconded. His hopes for getting that liquor store and all it represents to him are dashed, and so are his dreams. Crisis. In Hamlet, our protagonist is stabbed with a poisoned sword that will bring about his death. In a certain way, this is actually good news, because it might prevent him from the vengeful act of killing his uncle. However, he will have been deprived of the opportunity to make a thoughtful choice about his decision by this turn of events. Crisis. It's possible to develop theories about different masterworks and how elements of structure play out. I would contend that in Doll's House, the real crisis is not the moment when Torvald learns of Nora's forgery and excoriates her, but rather it's the moment when he tells her that he will take her back and they can continue on with their marriage, acting as if nothing had ever happened. Nora sees Torvald's hypocrisy, and the crisis for Nora, in my estimation, is whether she will allow herself to continue on in a marriage to a man like Torvald. Each of these crises is a key dramatic moment in the play and cause the audience to step back and take stock, wondering what is going to happen next. Now let's look at climax. And for those of you who are following along in your handouts, we are up to page 7. Climax. What is climax? How does it function? In this podcast, the term climax refers to the moment when the protagonist makes a decisive choice which is designed to overcome the obstacle which seemingly cannot be overcome. Typically, the decision or choice made here is an heroic one. The protagonist may give up his life or her life for someone else. The protagonist may do the thing that he or she said he or she would never do. Or the protagonist may act in a way that is almost a complete contradiction of the values that the character has espoused prior to that moment. The fearful intellectual may pick up his sword to do battle with the dragon. The woman who has been living as a man to get what she wants finally reveals her true gender. The rebellious teenage runaway decides to go back home and face his parents. This choice typically helps reveal the theme or central idea of the play, and I'll talk more about that in a few moments. The core idea is that getting what one wants to overcome a monster, reveal one's brilliance, or come back to life is not an easy task and requires sacrifice. Philosophically, things that are worth having usually do not come easily. The play, then, reveals the writer's idea about what it takes to get what one wants. Courage, truthfulness, a willingness to assume responsibility. Climax is important because it requires the active protagonist to make a difficult choice. The protagonist has been the stand-in for the audience member so far, and in making this choice, the protagonist fulfills the audience's need to overcome and achieve. It also provides insight into what might be required if audience members are to overcome and achieve themselves. Further, since climax is linked to the underlying meaning associated with the story, it elevates the material. If the audience has been sitting watching the story for some time, investing in what they've seen, the climax provides the payoff for the audience and takes the content to a higher level. It stops being just a story and becomes a story about something. Even a silly comedic romp can be elevated if the hero makes a powerful choice at the end. I've often heard writers, directors, and producers say that they just want to provide the audience with a good time. And often this statement seems to refer to a play or an evening of theater, which is not much more than a bunch of funny ideas strung together with no real escalation or payoff. I frequently believe that with a little bit of concentrated thinking, writers could easily take their story to a higher level, and a climax preceded by a crisis can do that. A side note on this topic. If someone else saves the protagonist or circumstances conspire to save the protagonist without his or her actually having to do anything about it, I would say that strictly speaking, climax has not taken place. The story may be resolved, but there's no climax because the hero or the heroine of the story has not taken action. The term deus ex machina is an old term. It's a very old term which had its roots in Greek theater. And it's used to describe just a situation like this, where it's like a miracle happens at the end of the play and saves the protagonist. So while that's certainly one way to resolve a story, I would encourage the playwright to see if there is not an action that the hero can take himself or herself to resolve the crisis, providing that climactic moment of catharsis for the audience member. Now let's look at some examples. So when Wizard of Oz, Glinda the Good Witch appears at the moment of crisis and explains that Dorothy can use the ruby slippers to get home. Now, Dorothy still has to make the choice herself, and conceptually, this is difficult. She wanted to get over the rainbow, after all, and she's there. And her friends in Oz are a lovable and supportive lot. However, Dorothy has determined that there is no place like home and makes the decision to go back. That's the climax. Walter Lee is given a second chance to get that liquor store. If he only takes back the deposit that Lena put down on the house in Clyburn Park, he'll have the money. He can do what he wants. Heroically, he turns down the money and sends the emissary from Clyburn Park on his way. This choice causes him to turn his back on what it was he thought he needed to become a man. And in so doing, he learns a new way to be manly. This is the climax. Hamlet, though mortally injured, continues on his path and kills his uncle, the king. His decisive choice, the climax, is to kill his uncle and fulfill the ghost's wish for revenge, even as he himself is dying. And Nora refuses to stay with her husband, having learned his true nature. She leaves the house and leaves her husband alone in it. Now, I have to tell you, even as I recount those examples of climax, which are well known in plays that I've seen and read many times, I've experienced their power as if I'm watching them on the stage. Those are some of the moments in theater that make the hair on the back of one's neck stand up. And that's really what a climax is all about. Now let's look at resolution. What is resolution and how does it function? And this content is on page 8 of your handout if you're following along. So, resolution is the point in the play where the audience gets information that helps them interpret and understand the meaning of everything they've seen so far. Here, the playwright illustrates a point of view about life through the metaphoric lens of the conclusion of the story. So the overall meta sequence that I've been laying out for you in this podcast is there's a terrible obstacle, which is the crisis, a heroic action, which is the climax, and then the ensuing events, which allow the audience to make conclusions about what they have seen, which is the resolution. So if the protagonist has performed an act of courage and gets what he wants and has a happy ending, it probably means that the writer believes that if the audience member demonstrates courage with respect to an obstacle, then the audience member will likely experience happiness as well. Perhaps the protagonist demonstrates courage but doesn't get what he or she wants, and then he gets something else which might even be better. In this case, the meaning may be that courage is a good thing, and sometimes you're rewarded by having your expectations exceeded rather than just met. Typically in theater, meaning is revealed metaphorically. Resolution works hand-in-hand with the old and the new world order, and meaning is revealed indirectly through those story clues that are provided by the playwright. The audience assesses what they see happening with the protagonist in the aftermath of the climax to interpret how the protagonist's world has changed for the better or worse because of the events of the plot. Usually, the elements that were being tracked by the audience were set up early in the play and then pay off during this section as the audience gets to see what happened. For the playwright, the challenge of resolution is taking the story and figuring out what the protagonist has learned and whether the protagonist is happy with that outcome. Once that's done, the playwright then has to determine how to reveal that information to the audience without saying, as the characters in the cartoon TV show South Park do, "We learned a lesson here today." There are a wide variety of possible arcs to the story and its resolution. I'll talk you through these in this podcast, and I actually put these in a table format, which begins on page 9 of the handout. If you want to look at that, it might be easier to follow along in the table. So let's look at some possible story arcs. If the protagonist gets what he wants, he's happy and is probably better off, too, having learned something about what it takes to get what you want. This is example is The Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy gets what she wants and she learns that there's no place like home. Perhaps the protagonist doesn't get what he or she wants, but gets something else, and then is happy anyway, or better off. Maybe the protagonist is smarter, more enlightened, or better adjusted. And some of the examples I've been working with in this podcast fall into that category: Raisin in the Sun, Doll's House, The Music Man, and the classic Christmas Carol with Ebenezer Scrooge follows that model. In some cases, the protagonist gets what he wants or what she wants, but discovers it wasn't all that great. They may be happy anyway, or in some ways better off, because they kind of burned through that one. And August Osage County is an example of that by Tracy Letts, and Good People by David Lindsay Abair, I think, follows that model as well. In some cases, the protagonist gets what he or she wants, finds out it wasn't all that great or that there's some big problem with it, and then is tragically unhappy. So this is the model of a tragic play. And examples, there are many of them, but Hamlet, Oedipus, Macbeth, Frankenstein are all examples of that story arc. So there's a variety of different ways the story can go. Now I'm going to drill down and use some of these examples that I just provided and drill down into them a little more deeply so you can really see the anatomy or the wiring of them. So in Wizard of Oz, Dorothy gets what she wants, and she realizes that if she ever goes looking for her heart's desire again, she won't need to go looking any further than her own backyard. Moreover, all the friends she was leaving in Oz turn out to be none other than refractions of friends she already had in Kansas. All is well, and Dorothy has learned an important life lesson about home. In Raisin in the Sun, we don't exactly know what is going to happen to the younger family in Clyburn Park. And it's probably not going to be easy. It's quite clear that everyone, including Walter Lee, is very, very happy with the way everything went down, though. Lena is going to be taking that plant she's been nursing over the course of the play with her to their new home, and it's quite clear that she expects it to flourish in that new environment. There are more paths than one to becoming a man, and Lorraine Hansberry seems to be suggesting that self-respect, rather than material success, is one of them. In The Music Man, we know we're in for a happy ending. Harold Hill did not get what he wanted. He was not able to fleece the citizens of River City and take their money and leave them with a bunch of musical instruments that no one could play. By turning himself in, staying and facing the music, as it were, he could expect little more than jail time. But instead, and this is actually rather magical, his ridiculous think system turns out to be one that works. And he's united with Mary and the librarian, and the implication is that they're going to live happily ever after. Taking responsibility and facing the music pay off. And there are lots of ancillary benefits for the stubborn citizens of River City as well. In some cases, the audience actually isn't able to see much resolution. In Doll's House, for instance, Nora's decision to leave ends the play. Here, we will never know exactly what happened, and we must come to our own conclusion about how this decision played out. Or we could also wait 100 years for someone to write A Doll's House Part 2, if I think we can wait that long. Now that we've covered the key elements of crisis, climax, and resolution, let's look at how they relate to other topics of narrative. And if you look in your handout one more time, on page 11, you'll see what I hope is by now a familiar graphic. And it locates the three concepts of crisis, climax, and resolution in larger context. Crisis is indicated by a single word, which appears on the plot arrow at the upper right. Crisis is the last obstacle and the last piece of plot. Climax is depicted as the large yellow arrow at the top right, which says decision. And typically this point, of course, is where the protagonist makes the fateful decision, which I call climax. Resolution is everything to the right of the vertical blue line, after the major dramatic question has been answered. It bleeds into the new world order as the audience finds out what happens next and determines what conclusions it could come to about the protagonist and the choices that the protagonist has made. Crisis, climax, and resolution function best if they've been set up. If the prince needs to demonstrate courage to become king, it needs to be set up in the old world order that he's easily frightened, and then his timid nature needs to be reflected throughout the story as the plot unfolds. If the hero needs to shoot the monster to overcome it, then the fact that the hero doesn't want to shoot anyone should clearly be established early on and reinforced as the plot unfolds. Dorothy desperately wants to be over the rainbow. She even sings a song about it in the old world order. So her decision to go back to the other side of the rainbow at the conclusion of the play tells us something about how much she has changed. Much of the focus of Raisin is that liquor store and what Walter Lee thinks it can do for him. Other subplots, such as his wife's pregnancy and how Walter Lee feels about her having an abortion and how his mother responds to his reaction, tell us about the theme of manhood in the play. Nora's willingness to step out and forge documents which will help her husband pay his medical bills, which is something that happens before the play even begins, and we only learn about it through conversation, foreshadows aspects of Nora's character which are important throughout the play, especially at its climax. In this way, the play should be internally coherent with all the elements leading up to crisis, climax, and resolution. Now let's look at how these elements relate to theme. And if you're following along in your handout, we're on page 11. None of the podcasts up till now have explicitly tackled the issue of theme and have primarily focused on storytelling elements. Theme is usually implicit. It is revealed through story and character choices. Theme is actually embedded in stories that we tell about people. And the series of story elements that we're talking about in this podcast function as symbols through which the themes can be revealed. Much like dreams, these elements may be selected unconsciously and can reveal beliefs or ideas that we have as writers, which we may actually only be very dimly aware of. Even absurdist plays have a theme, and generally the theme of an absurdist play is that life is random, meaningless, and absurd. And no matter what you do, it's going to get you. It can be helpful for the writer to consider theme before the play is even written, so that the writer can point to the theme as the story unfolds. Each of the plays that I use as teaching examples has a fairly clear theme, and I actually think that's one of the reasons that these plays are so timeless. In Wizard of Oz, the theme is about finding home. In Raisin in the Sun, we're looking at a question like, what does it mean to be a man? What does it take to be a man? In A Doll's House, we're looking at a woman's role in a marriage. In Music Man, we're asking the question, is it possible to change your path and find love and happiness? Is redemption possible? And in Hamlet, we're looking at the question as to whether or not revenge is worth the price that it extracts from the person who is the avenger. Each of the five writers appears to have clear opinions, and they're actually revealed through plotting and through the actions and choices that take place during crisis, climax, and resolution. I'm going to say that one of my students is currently working on a historical play. And the central conflict involves a question of whether violence is justified to achieve important political ends, and if so, how much violence actually is justified. Now, this question is a really important one, and I'd say an interesting one, too. Now, I experience my student as wanting to tell the story without taking a position on that issue. And I personally believe, and I've told her this, that if she follows this course, it's going to weaken her writing. I am in favor of identifying your own position, whatever it is, taking it, and then letting the audience decide if they agree with the position or not. I am less supportive of the idea of not taking a position and then leaving it to the audience to figure out things on their own. Personally, I think that's the coward's way out. Now, in some cases, the writing of the play helps the writer determine his or her own views on the topic. And I'm writing a play like that right now myself, where I am about a third of the way into it, and I haven't completely decided where I'm going to go at the conclusion, because I'm not sure that I know exactly what my own point of view is yet. But I'm going to have to figure that out in order for my play to work. In terms of plotting, it can be dangerous to start writing without a point of view of some kind, however, because it can result in the writer not knowing where he or she wants to go and then losing track of the story. Personally, as an audience member, I don't enjoy plays, which appear to be a psychotherapy exercise by a writer who's working on a personal issue by writing a play about it, and who is hoping that I, as the audience member, am going to participate in their process and witness their journey of discovery. I say, leave it in the oven until it's baked. Do not ask me to eat your play or your theme before it's fully cooked, please. I also think that a writer who has something to say and knows what it is going to be much more motivated to continue moving through the play in order to get to crisis, climax, and resolution, where the theme of the play is revealed. So I think working those things out in advance can serve as a powerful incentive to keep writing. In summary, we've talked about crisis, climax, and resolution, what they are and why they're important. We've looked at examples of each, and we've seen how these three concepts relate to others that we've already talked about in prior podcasts. And then finally, we talked about theme, how it's revealed often through use of these three elements. Join us for the next podcast, when we'll turn from structure and begin to look at writing process as we talk about the rewrite. The learning assignments, or food for thought, for this podcast begin on page 13. And if you printed out the handout, there's some spaces for you to take notes. And I always insert a commercial here for the Playwright's Journal. And if you don't have one, you might want to get one. And that's actually a great place for you to do these exercises. So question number one is to think about a play that you really like and see if you can identify in that play how the elements of crisis, climax, and resolution are used. What appears to be the crisis, that final obstacle? Does the protagonist actually make a decision at the climax? What is it? And then what is the protagonist's world like in the aftermath of that decision, which would be the resolution? Question two, going back to that play that you like, what is the decisive choice that the protagonist makes? Is the choice in some way foreshadowed earlier in the play? And how does the choice appear to relate to the theme? Now, for question three, we're going to turn to a play that you are working on, or perhaps one that you're thinking about. And I'm going to ask you to consider crisis and climax. What is the final obstacle that the protagonist will encounter as he or she moves towards the goal? What might get broken that can never be fixed, leaving the audience to fear for a moment that all is lost? And then, of course, what is the decision that the protagonist will make in light of having encountered the crisis? Finally, and again, this refers back to the play that you're working on or a play you're thinking about, consider your resolution. Does the protagonist get what he or she wants, or does he or she perhaps get something else, maybe something better? How does the protagonist feel about how everything turned out? And how will you let us know that without simply telling us? So good luck with these assignments. And I want to send another shout out to Play Submissions Helper, the series sponsor. Thank you so much for sponsoring this series of podcasts and allowing me to bring these concepts to the audience at Play Submissions Helper. I love writing stories and I love helping storytellers write theirs. And I look forward to seeing you the next time around in podcast number 10.